The ESL Rochester Fringe Festival, the most anticipated festival in the region, will once again excite audiences with nearly 650 performances September 9th through the 20th. From comedy, dance, and theater to jaw-dropping spectacles across 39 venues all around Rochester. Don't miss amazing performances in the Spiegel Tent, including the world premiere of Cirque du Fringe Claws Out, Shot Sphere, Kids Fringe, and more. And direct from Italy, Sphere, a mind-blowing outdoor spectacle, free at Parcel 5, September 19th and 20th. RochesterFringe.com.
Let's take a minute to talk about Joe Bean Coffee, my go-to for great beans here in Rochester. I'm Chris Lindstrom, host of the Food About Town podcast and co-founder of Lunchador, and I regularly brew their coffee at home. A recent favorite of mine is the natural process Colombian Finca Buena Vista coffee from Edwin Zambrano. This coffee won a 2024 Good Food Award, and I can't help but agree with that assessment. My brews have been full with fruity flavors of pineapple, strawberry, and orange, and each cup has brightened my morning. Next time you need some beans, head over to Joe Bean's Roastery at 565 Blossom Road in Rochester, or shop online at joebeanroasters.com. For our loyal listeners, save 15% off your next order at joebeanroasters.com with code LUNCHADOR. You can also subscribe to Joe Bean's Perpetual Joy and receive freshly roasted beans on your schedule, and never be without great coffee again. Joe Bean is more than just coffee. It's a community, a commitment, and a cup full of care. Music means it's time for another episode of Just Can't Not. I'm your host, Chris Lindstrom, and we're here with another preview for the scenic Rochester Fringe Festival happening in downtown Rochester, September 9th to 20th, the ESL Rochester Fringe Festival. Go to rochesterfringe.com to find out all the events. Get the app so you can find stuff on the fly. And I'm here with a guest. Guest, why don't you introduce yourself?
Oh, hello, friend. I'm Glenn Tickle. I'm performing at the Rochester Fringe Festival.
So you are, and your event, let's look it up. So your events are on September 18th at 8 o'clock, September 19th at 9 o'clock, the 20th at 6 and 9 o'clock at the Center Stage Theater at the JCC.
Yeah, it is called Glenn Tickle Tries to Be a Person. It is my latest hour of stand-up comedy. I'm thrilled to be doing a full hour show myself at the Rochester Fringe. I've been on some showcases there in the past with some other comics, but this one's just me talking for the whole time.
So I apologize in advance. I didn't do a lot of ahead prep. So when it comes to doing hours, sure. Is this, what number of hours is this for you as like full hours of stand-up?
Great question. This will be I did an album in 2016.
Okay.
I recorded a special in 2019 and then another half hour in 2020 and then another hour in 2023. So
yeah,
four-ish.
Okay.
Because the one's about 20 something minutes. That's the one that I did for Dry Bar. That's the shortest.
Yeah. And that tends to be the case with a lot of those. What are, you know, ostensibly showcases, but they're treated as individual sets.
Yeah, so they film three comics in a night and then just stagger the releases throughout the year. But yeah, this will be, it's the third full hour, or no, fourth full hour of stand-up that I've recorded.
Yeah, and I saw the name of the show, which is Glenn Tickle Tries to Be a Person, which
yes.
It is an enticing title, right?
That's the goal.
it offers a opening that you want to learn about. You want to learn, hey, what does this person mean by this?
Yeah.
Now, as a stand-up hour, has this refined into more through lines than when you were starting? Does this feel like a more complete thought? How do you think about this? How do you think about this hour so far?
It's very different than when I pitched it to the festival when submissions were open, which
okay.
is a thing that I've talked to a lot of typically at fringe festivals more than if it's just like a full comedy festival. But a lot of the other performers that I know have done similar things where like you pitch one show and then by the time it's time to do that show, it is kind of a different show.
Yeah.
So the title comes from the idea that the hour of stand-up that I've been working on is largely based around the idea of self-improvement. Because last year I started trying to think of like, how do I improve my station in comedy? Right. Mm. I've been doing this a long time. It is my job. I am successful at it to a degree, but I would, you know, sure would love to be more successful at it. So I started making a list of what I saw as like shortcomings, stuff I could work on. And then when I would perform, I would go up with that list instead of a set list. So instead of like a list of the jokes I was going to tell, it was stuff like, remember to make eye contact, ask someone a question, acknowledge other people are in the room with you. Because a lot of what I've done in the past as a stand-up is just pretty much just monologuing at people. Like I get up there with a pretty good idea of what I want to talk about, and I just power through on those topics. I don't interact with the audience much, and I've been looking slightly above the audience's head for the 15 years that I've been doing this. And stuff that I see other comics doing, it's like, oh, I think if I treat the audience like individual people that are in a room with me and acknowledge their humanity, they might have a better time.
Yeah. And I'm not sure you noticed, Glenn. The only way to get famous as a comedian nowadays is by 2 minute and under clips and doing crowd work. So I'm really glad that you're acknowledging that the crowd are people, because you found the singular avenue to being a successful comedian in 2025.
There's a couple minutes on that in the show where I talk about, I've never really done crowd work a lot as a comic, but it's also, I mean, people talk about it like it's this new thing Matt Rife invented five years ago, but it's like, no, we've been doing it since vaudeville. It's not new. It is just, it got popular. So people started chasing the thing that was popular.
I'm going to say, I saw Patrice O'Neill like 15 years ago in Rochester, and it was a mauling, but it was fundamentally him just wanting to destroy somebody's night. And it was a delight to everybody else except for that person.
Now I think because of the glut of it on social media, there's a bit of a pushback where people are kind of getting sick of it, which I'm thrilled to hear.
Rightfully so.
Sick of it the whole time. Mainly because I don't like doing it. I like talking at groups of people way more than I talk to people. When you work as a comedian, a lot of times after shows, people are just like, oh man, I don't know how you get up there in front of all that. Seems so scary. I was like, I'm more scared talking to you now. Like, I will stand in front of 1,000 people in the theater, no problem at all. But then when they want to talk to me after the show, that's when like the anxiety kicks in, because on stage, I know what I'm doing. I know what I'm going to say next when it's, you know, just a person I'm talking to them, hoping they buy a CD or something after the show. It's like, oh, I don't know what we're supposed to do here.
Yeah. And it's a specific kind of control. Right. And you know, it's something that as like when I'm hosting podcasts or producing other ones on our network, like I have the luxury of being in full control over those things. And when I'm a guest, I treat myself as a chaos agent, right? I try to break their format.
Yes.
I try to do other things.
I was
things.
Doing that last night on a show.
It's so much fun because I know where you're pivoting. I know what you're doing. So I'm going to break the format. I was just going to pivot back to you. You mentioned all those things about you trying to be a person. I'm like, wow, you really described the experience of being like on the Asperger's autism spectrum.
That's what the show has turned into.
In like four or five little spots, like, huh, I probably should make eye contact with them. And I'm like, I know I have to force myself to do that. I have no diagnosis, but like, all those things are like, we probably should think about other people occasionally and remember that they exist.
I considered if this should be like a reveal moment in the show, but I've been talking about it so much online that I'm like, oh, it's not going to be a surprise. Like if anybody who is a fan of mine comes to see this show, they've already seen, they probably follow me on Instagram or whatever, where I've already been talking about being autistic for the past like 6 months, quite a bit. But that is what the show has kind of turned into, because from starting that list of ways, like, how can I get better at doing comedy? And then I'm like, these are just like personality flaws. and then it's like, oh, actually a lot of these are symptoms. And so I've been going through the process of getting like an official assessment and diagnosis which didn't go the way that I thought it was going to. So that is what the show is kind of turned into. Yeah. Of my friend Ricky Glore, who I host a podcast with called Daddy-O, on the show one week, I was talking about what the show, what Glenn Tickle Tries to Be a Person has become. And he's like, are you treating the audience as a jury and you're trying to convince them that you're autistic? And I'm like, I mean, not intentionally, but yeah, now that you've asked that question, I think that is kind of, that's kind of where it's at.
And I kind of like that as a concept personally.
Yeah,
like
the way the show is structured is basically I do some just regular stand-up up top. Then I talk about autism, and then I talk about the assessment. It's not like a big surprise in the thing, because I've already talked about it online, but the assessment said that I'm not autistic. But the reasons they gave have nothing to do with autism. It's like, oh, it's just, you're just bad at this. They're like, well, you can't be autistic. You're married. Like, you clearly have no trouble forming social relationships. And I was like, I'm married to a lady I met when we were in the seventh grade, and we just keep hanging out with each other so we don't have to interact with strangers.
Well,
it
hasn't stopped yet, so everything's good. Yeah.
Is that not diagnostically relevant that she is also autistic? Like, I feel like that's got nothing to do with it. Like, I know a lot of married autistic people. She also said I was too smart, which I was like, well, thank you, but that's again not part of it.
I was gonna say, we've seen documentaries starring Dustin Hoffman and other people about that.
I make a case in the show for Isaac Newton being autistic. I do acknowledge that it's problematic to try to go back in history and diagnose people by modern standards, but also that dude's 100% autistic. Like, there's no way.
I mean, there was a whole movie. So there was a Ben Affleck movie, The Accountant.
Yeah.
Where the whole conceit is that he is like fully spectrum-y, and like they're going back, well, he's naming himself after all these famous mathematicians and philosophers. I'm like, and all of them were avoiding the camera, a theoretical camera. And I'm like, all right, well, it's a bit nail on the head, but also like it makes sense. Like if you're thinking that weirdly outside of the box, like it's part of the deal.
Yeah. But I guess if there was I feel comfortable doing it with Isaac Newton because I'm very confident that he was, and I'm making the case where it's like, well, no, he's one of the greatest minds of history and he is autistic. Like being smart isn't a disqualifier. I know a lot of smart autistic people and he's arguably the smartest one. But I got to do it at a science center for last weekend at a show that was like nerd themed. And it's like, oh, I'd never done it before. I'd written the bit and I was going to workshop it over the next couple of weeks. I was like, oh, this might be the perfect room to try out. Do you guys think Isaac Newton was autistic material? And it got such a pop where it's like, okay, nerds going to a comedy show at a science center are pretty on board with this idea. I think I can win the general public over with it.
Yeah, because even the apocryphal story of like an apple falling on his head is like, oh, it actually took like a physical piece of something falling on your head to realize that there were other things around you.
Yeah, but I also I've spent a lot of time looking into and thinking about Isaac Newton. When I was a kid, like he was a special interest of mine.
Yeah,
I did in 2020 because all my shows got canceled. I had nothing else to do. I retaught myself animation and I made a 3-minute. Cartoon about Isaac Newton pitching the first draft of his theory of gravity, but he only thinks it's about apples. And it's 3 minutes long. The animation is not particularly good. It took almost the whole year because I didn't really know what I was doing. And animation takes forever.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, that dude locked himself in a room and invented calculus because he couldn't do math right. And he's like, I'm going to figure this out. Autistic people don't like ambiguity. So like, if you don't know the answer to something, it's upsetting. And in Isaac Newton's day, we didn't know the answer to a lot of stuff. He's like, well, I'm going to answer all the big questions of the universe.
Yeah, I'm just going to come up with an entire wing of math that that kids are going to hate for the next few hundred years.
He was obsessed with the number 7. That's why he said there were 7 colors in the spectrum, even though there's only 6. Look at a rainbow. There's 6. Indigo is a lie that we've been letting him get away with for hundreds of years. There's no indigo in there. You can't convince me.
It's ridiculous. So I'm kind of intrigued. So when you're when you have such a clear through line on a show,
yeah,
when you were thinking about this, did you have any urge to turn this into what, you know, the fine difference between a stand-up hour and a one-person show? Did you have any inkling to treat it more like that, or do you
only in so much as I pitched it to a Fringe Festival.
Yeah.
So it's a similar move I did years ago. The special that I filmed in 2019 is pretty one man showy, mostly because of the subject matter. It's an hour. My brother died in a car accident and I wrote an hour of stand up about it. It's stand up, but most people who just want to go out and watch stand up comedy don't want to hear so many dead brother jokes in one go.
I mean a regular stand-up special has a decent amount, but
yeah, there's gonna be a couple.
Yeah, how can there not be?
I started doing the material and it's like, oh, I need to like kind of quarantine this and just do it as a separate hour. But with Tries to Be a Person, it's like, oh, well, this was when I pitched it, it was just this, you know, self-improvement list idea, and it's like, oh, this is, you know, there's a theme to it, but it's just going to be stand up kind of on this one topic. And then it's become increasingly about me being angry that a lady told me I'm not autistic. But then the kind of, I think the difference between one man show or one person show and just stand up is the amount of jokes where the one I did in 2019 is called Good Grief. And the jokes that are in it, I think, are very good and funny, but there's also just some parts where I'm sad. And it's like, yeah, well, if I call this a one-person show, that's okay.
Yeah, I mean, it can be a crutch, and it also can be a format that, for specific topics, it is the right choice to make. And I just love the fine differences between the two, because as soon as somebody labels it that way, it's either a crutch because they couldn't make it funny enough.
Right.
Or it was.
I've seen some of those for sure.
Yeah. And there's plenty of those where it's just like, oh, this is really just somebody talking at you, but not with a full thing. So it's either like this is the format that works for the person or for the topic, or it's mediocre. And it's just, I find it fascinating to, you know, work through what does it mean to the person at the time.
Yeah. And I think one of the first times I ran the hour that became Good Grief was in Rochester.
Yeah.
I did it at Photo City Music Hall, would have probably been 2018. Mm. And it was the first time I needed to get out of town to do it. Cause it's like, well, if I do it locally, I live in New Jersey. I'm like, if I do it here, people who know me will come and they will be supportive. And I don't want that. I just need to see, can I get strangers to laugh at these jokes?
Yeah.
And then I did it at the Scranton Fringe Festival and toured it around a bit and then filmed it at the end of 2019.
So do you find that Fringe Festivals have been a good venue for you generally? Is there a style that the audience tends to be that works for you?
The thing I like about doing them is the audience is there with more intentionality than I'm used to with stand-up in general, but also the kind of shows I do, a lot of like corporate events. I did a wedding yesterday. Like the places I am performing, a lot of times it borders on like ambush comedy where people are just sort of at work and then I'm the event at the end of the meeting. Or it's just I did a guy's birthday party in Ohio a couple weeks ago where it's like I'm just kind of hosting the dinner. But Fringe Festival audiences are like, well, no, we came to this event. We looked at the program. We decided that this is the event we want to be at, versus sometimes people just go to a stand-up club because it's Friday and they're like, oh, you want to go watch some stand-up?
Yeah. Which is something that never really resonated with me. Like if you go to a movie, right? If you go to a movie, like you don't just go to a movie. I mean, some people do. I just don't understand them. Right. If you're just going to go to a movie and like, oh, well, either it's going to be like, you know, it's going to be The Room, or it's going to be Room, or it's going to be John Wick 4. And they treat them equally like, oh, yeah, I'm just going to a movie and I'll be OK with whatever.
Yeah. Like I would do that as a child. I would just ask my parents to take me to the movies.
Yeah.
And then we would go see whatever age appropriate movie was out. But I mean, I guess I worked at a movie theater in high school too, so I would just go see anything that came out, but it's because I got to see movies for free. Like, it wasn't a huge investment of money or time the way it is now. So I'm pickier. Plus, you know, as a father of young children, it's like I have a harder time getting to the theater to see something I want to watch.
Yeah.
But I got to watch K-pop Demon Hunters in the theater last weekend because my children wanted to go. So.
Now, that also seems to be a bit of a cultural phenomenon right now.
I didn't realize how big it was until they told me it was playing at the movie theater. And we went, and it was the most full I've seen a movie theater in a while.
Yeah. What did it work as an adult as well? Or is it purely like kid claptrap?
It is. I'm not terribly invested in it.
Yeah.
But it's good. It's a well done movie about K-pop stars fighting demons.
I mean,
if that's your thing.
I mean, hey, that if you accomplish the name of the thing and you like the things I hate most are like kid shows that talk down to kids, that treat them like they're subhuman.
That's why I want to fight Blippi.
Oh, it's the worst. Yeah. Like that stuff.
There's a distinction between talking to children at their level and talking to them like they're the dumbest people in the world.
Yeah.
He does the latter.
Yeah.
I forget her name. She's like the girl Blippi. It's the same channel, same production company. She does a great job of talking to children. But
what is that, Miss Rachel maybe?
Was it?
Miss Rachel maybe?
Oh, completely different. She's a completely different person. She's incredible.
Yeah, that's all I've heard.
There's like Blippi, there's like a girl, there's two different Blippies because they like Gallagher 2'd it at one point.
Yeah,
and then
a lot less watermelons though.
There's also like a girl who's Blippi's friend who's in some of the videos, but Miss Rachel's like a separate channel. She's great.
Yeah, a lot less watermelons, a lot less conservative political talk, and probably a lot less day trading.
I would hope. For Blippi's sake.
Yeah, because it's, you know, it's stuff like that. Those things give kids entertainment a bad name when you have astonishing pieces of creative storytelling, like what I now refer to as like the gold standard of kids programming, which is like Bluey, right? Which is when you watch it, you're like, oh, god damn, they actually told a story that's real. They told a real story and treated kids like they were real people, and that the parents weren't just random characters. They actually acted like people.
That's why I talk about Bandit Healer is... I think the greatest representation of fatherhood in media through all of time.
Yeah.
Because he is not perfect.
No.
But he is trying and he messes up, but he acknowledges when he does and tries to do better next time.
Yeah.
He's not like Danny Tanner from Full House was just like perfect dad. Everything's so clean. He's on top of it with school lunch. He's getting everyone out of time. Dude doesn't mess up. And then there's like Al Bundy who just sucks.
Yeah.
But Bandit is rising to the occasion. And I've heard other dads complain about him because it sets like an unobtainable standard. And I was, well, how about you try? How about you just give it a shot? You're not going to be as good as Bandit. He's a cartoon dog.
Yeah.
He's not real, right? No. He's got people writing his words and actions. You are a human. Like, but try your best. I think that's the real lesson for parents watching Bluey is like, give it, just put some work in and you can be better at this.
Yeah. And when you take a step back, you're like, oh yeah, the voice actor's also like a punk rock star. And like, yeah, of course the guy is not perfect. And that's the whole thing is like, it's not about being perfect. It's about trying to be a person.
Yeah.
See, look at
I've
that.
I've said for a couple of years now that if you told me I have 8 minutes to live, I would watch the episode Takeaway with my children.
Oh,
like that's how I'd go out.
Hey, and you're trying to be a person, and that would be succeeding. So let's get out the plugs one more time for all the shows.
Sure.
We've got September 18th at 8, the 19th at 9, the 20th, 6 and 9. You can go to rochesterfringe.com to get your tickets for Glenn Tickle Tries to Be a Person. Anything else before we close out?
That's it. That's if people want to come to that. I would love it if you did. I'm really excited to be going back to Rochester. There was a couple years stretch where I was up there. It felt like every couple months, but it's been a minute, so I'm excited to be coming back.
Well, welcome back to Rochester, and we'll see you at the JCC.
This has been a presentation of the Lunch Hour Podcast Network.